Hi, this is Chaz Palminteri here, and welcome to the podcast. A couple of things I'd like to just get out of the way. If you really love the podcast, please hit that subscribe button, because so many great guests are coming up. Obviously, few weeks ago, we had Catherine Narducci, Billy Baldwin, and we got a lot of big surprises coming. So we're having fun, and I'm having a blast. So let's see. Can we shut that door? I hear my wife talking over there. I just don't feel like hearing her talking right now because, oh, she heard me say that. Would she be pissed? Man. Okay. So, so many people love the Neighborhood Logic segment. We're going to do it again. We're going to make it an ongoing thing, Neighborhood Logic. So I think we're going to take questions. So many people sent in questions. If you have a question for Neighborhood Logic, please go to chazpalminterishow@gmail.com and send in your questions, okay? Because sometimes it's better, call me. A shrink costs too much money. I mean, come on. What I've always said, I've been in therapy 6 months, no, a year. No, it's 30 years now. And actually 30 years, you believe that? My God. I wish I had the money I gave this guy. I could buy 5 houses. Anyway, Dante, my son, is here. Dante, tell me, please, read some of the questions that we have.
Okay, first question is from Mike DeMarco from Hazlitt, New Jersey.
Italian, go ahead.
He wants to know, what is your favorite scene from A Bronx Tale that you have seen tattooed on people? Or what scene would you want to get tattooed on yourself from A Bronx Tale?
I couldn't get a tattoo of of anybody, let alone myself. I mean, I'm definitely scared of needles. But I don't know. You know what? I've seen that a lot. A lot of people, they send me their photos. Oh, in fact, maybe we'll try to put it up. This one photo, this one tattoo of a guy. But before I even say that, I've seen some great, great tattoos, and I've seen some bad ones. If you're going to get a tattoo, please go to Bang Bang in New York. They have the best tattoo artist there, better than anybody I've ever seen. Anybody that I've ever seen with a tattoo of Bronx Tale, I've asked them where they got it, and they said Bang Bang in New York. Keith Hernandez, great. Mr. K, great. You really, if you're going to get it, something like that is so detailed, and you want it to look like a piece of art, not just some kind of like, you know, kind of faded photograph. Go to Bang Bang, go to Dez, or go to Mr. K. Just absolutely, anybody there is really great. That's the place to go.
Do you have any tattoos?
I don't have any tattoos. You know, my friends, when we were 18 years old, they all got Playboy bunnies on their calf. And I said, thank God I didn't do that. Because I'd be walking with a Playboy bunny on your calf. These are grown men now, and they have that. They're embarrassed at the beach. They're walking around with a Playboy bunny. You know, one thing about tattoos, you know, they look nice when you're young, and it's great. But, you know, when you get older, when you get in your 60s and...
That's when they're the best.
What?
That's when they're the best.
My son says that's when they're the best. You know, my son, let me tell you about my son. My son knew, I said, look, you know, don't get, you know, when you get 18, 19, maybe you can get a tattoo. I'm not fond of them because I grew up in a different era. When I say I'm not fond of them, don't forget the tattoos that I saw were guys, well, my friends, they're all in prison. So they got a tattoo by a guy using a magic marker. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it was embarrassing. I mean, now, like I said, if you go to a place like Bang Bang, it's a work of art. So I'm okay with it. But my son knew I wasn't crazy about him getting a tattoo. I just wasn't. He calls me up one day. He's in L.A. He calls me up. He goes, Dad, I met this tattoo parlor. This is years ago. And he says to me, I want to get this tattoo. And I'm like, absolutely not. You know how I feel about that. When you're out of my house, then you can get one. When you're old enough to live on your own, then you get a tattoo. He says, well, I want to get on the inside of my arm, like right here, the saddest thing in life is wasted talent. You imagine that? He conned his father.
Yes.
Okay, and I said, You want to get the saddest thing in life is waste of talent. I said, he said, yeah, Dad, because of what you always told me and what your father told you and what, you know, my grandfather told you and told me about waste of talent. You conned me, Dante. You conned me. You conned me.
He said, I would be honored.
And I said, I would be honored. Imagine that. From not getting it to saying, I would be honored would if you honored. Got that. So he did get that.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Now, did wise guys have typically bad tattoos?
Some guys have bad tattoos because they go to bad people. You know, they just don't go to... When you do a photograph, like if you do my face, I saw once a guy did like me, my face. I mean, I looked like a cross between, I looked like James Cagney and Donald Duck. I don't know what I looked like. I said, that's not me.
But I mean, back in the Bronx, back in the day, what were the tattoos of the wise guys? What was that?
It was always mom, dad, a skull, you know, it was always something dumb. And mostly, don't forget, when I grew up, tattoos were only for people who were in jail. It was mostly prisoners got tattoos back then. Don't forget, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, so it was a lot different. Now art is, getting tattooed is really a work of art. And some of it I really like a lot. I would get one myself. I keep saying, I'm going to go to Bang Bang, and I'm going to see the guys. You know, Dez or Mr. K, somebody. And I want to get a Sicilian flag, the real Sicilian flag, not an Italian flag, on my shoulder, in the back. Oh, yeah. I want to do that. I'm just scared. I have to admit it.
Well, when you do it, I want to film it.
100%. That's happening.
Okay, if we do it.
Absolutely.
If we do that, we're going to film it. We're going to go down there. We're going to speak to the people at Bang Bang and ask if they would allow us to film it, and we'll do it.
That would be the greatest episode.
But I don't know if that's going to happen because I am, and I played all these tough guys in movies, but I'm a baby. You know, I'm a baby. When it comes to pain, I'm not good with pain. All right. So did I answer that guy's question?
Not at all, but it's okay.
Moving on.
No, no. Wait a minute. Mike, right?
Mike DeMarco.
From Hazlitt. If you go to Bang Bang. Okay, that's all.
Anyway, here's the next question.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is from Ethan. He's 16 and he's from Canada. And he says he's always been a big fan of crime movies and he was a huge fan of you in A Bronx Tale. I was wondering what it was like working on Call of Duty Black Ops 2 Zombies where you played Sal DeLuca.
Sal DeLuca when I did Call of Duty. Well, that was a good job because I only worked one day and I made a lot of money. Which was fun about that was so many kids who didn't know my movies obviously buy Call of Duty. And so a lot of those kids really, really got to know me from that movie. It was really strange because I stood in a room and they put all these little dots on me, like pins and stuff. And then I kind of like moved. It was really amazing.
So you were a character in the game.
I'm a character in the game. If you go on Call of Duty, if you rent that one, which one is it? Call of Duty?
Call of Duty, Black Ops 2.
Black Ops 2,
yeah.
Black Ops 2, that's the one.
So they had you read lines in like a green outfit?
Yeah, you know, there was four of us. There was me.
Joey Pants was in
Joey
it too.
Joey Pantoliano, yeah. Who's my dear friend and a great actor. Ray Liotta, great actor. And somebody else.
It was called Mob of the Dead.
Mob of the Dead.
Is, I love it.
Which that's is awesome.
So I said, see, I was getting, so we got paid a lot, but we got paid outright. So I said, I told my agent, I said, tell him I don't want no money. Tell him I want 1% of the gross. And they came back and they laughed at me. They said, that's not happening. So either this or we'll look for someone else. I said, okay. I mean, they did pay us a lot for that one day. But I wanted 1% of the gross. And the first day it came out, 40 million units.
Yeah. Call of Duty is like the biggest game.
Call of Duty, 40 million. It must have sold 100 million units.
Oh,
so,
easy.
So I was looking for the big score here, but obviously they were smarter than I was. You know, I said, no, I don't want no money. Just give me a piece of the thing. And they said no. So what's his name?
Ethan. He wanted to know what it was
fun.
Like.
I love doing it. And thanks for the question. Anybody else, Dante?
Yeah, we got a few more.
It's Neighborhood Logic time, folks. That's what it is. Neighborhood Logic.
Okay, this is from Michelle.
Michelle, okay.
She has two questions. Were your parents initially upset at the sight of you in the casket during the final scene of A Bronx Tale?
Were my parents upset when I was in the casket of A Bronx Tale? Yes, they were. My sisters actually were more upset. I was in the, and you know what? Look, Bob De Niro, he's such an incredible director, and he wants everything right. Well, I could tell you a funny story about the casket. And if there's that photo up there, and we're going to show that photo if we can, you'll see me laying in the casket and Bob De Niro and I laughing. That was because I could cut, you know, I was in the casket for 18 hours. 18 hours. I had to get up, I had to stretch my legs, I had to get back in again because Bob wanted everything to be right. We had to shoot the scene. It was crazy, right? And I kept falling asleep. And all of a sudden, I was sleeping, you would hear me snore. And Bob would say, cut, wake him up, and they would have to wake me up. And Joe Pesci was making jokes. It was really funny. So what they did was, they waited till I fell asleep, and Bob closed the coffin and put all the lights out on the set, and he made everybody leave. So now, I'm sleeping, right? I opened my eyes, and I went, I mean, it was a horror. And they all started laughing. They put on the lights. They're all laughing. That was a horror show. So, yes, yes, dear Michelle, it was crazy. Yes.
Okay, this is a really cool question. Since the real Eddie Mush was in the movie, did he ever say anything to you about your portrayal of Sonny, seeing as both of you actually knew him?
Yes.
Did any of the other guys who knew him ever say anything?
No. We never said anything about it. We never talked about him because we knew not to talk about him. The less people who knew who the real guy was. And that's another thing. Before I ask, I know we saw a lot of questions. Who was the real guy in Sonny and what was his name and yada, yada, yada. People have been asking me that. Please don't ask me that question no more because I will never, ever say his real name. Ever. I mean, I enjoy living. So that's out. I will never say it. You never know. There's family, friends. I could have said the wrong thing, yada, yada, yada. And don't forget, it's based on him. It's based on him. And it's also based on my uncle. So I put these two characters and I put them together. But the killing was absolutely the way you saw it. My uncle was, my uncle Joey Manfro, he goes by Joey, but his real name was Don Manfro, but he had to change his name because he wasn't old enough to fight. And he was really a great guy. And, you know, he was involved in things. You know, in fact, I have this thing here. He was shot here. He was shot six times. Six times. What happened was this guy would have, I can't tell you what happened, but what happened was, why did I even say that? Right, V? V, you understand. So we got a Greek girl here joining us, V. We call her V. But what's your real name, V?
Venetia.
Venetia, beautiful name. Greeks. Greek. One thing about Greeks, they stick together. Greeks stick together. A Greek will only marry a Greek. But I can tell you right now, my version of hell is waking up as a busboy in a Greek diner.
Yes, absolutely.
That's my version. I wake up and have nightmares because my two friends are Greek and I love them. But boy, you don't want to be a busboy in a diner. They make them paint their house on their off days. It's insane. They think you're an endangered servant forever, forever. Anyway, why did I get off on Greeks? But it's true.
I have a question.
Yeah,
just,
go ahead.
Just to go back to the previous question, was there any other pranks on A Bronx Tale set?
Were there any what?
Other pranks. They pulled the
prank. Oh, there were pranks all the time. We would constantly do that with each other. You know, I can't remember them offhand right now.
What about
now.
The one when you were playing craps?
Well, I think I told that story on another show. But I'll tell you just...
Did you?
Yeah, I think I did. Yeah, we were playing craps and Bob wanted to use real money. Everybody knows that one.
Yeah.
And the wise guys kept stealing the real money. I mean, it was a nightmare, you know. But what was the question? I went off
on... The question was, did Eddie Mush... Because he was the real Eddie Mush.
No.
Or anybody
no.
in the cast ever like guide your perception of Sonny because no. they knew him.
No, because Sonny was based on this guy who killed this guy. who we all knew. And then obviously he ended up getting whacked. So, you know, people didn't really, he'd lived not a long life, but he was a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very, he was different. You know, he read Machiavelli. He was just different, man. He was like a wise guy who was ahead of his time. He could have been like a CEO of a company. And it's based somewhat on my uncle, a little bit there too, you know. So anyway, I was telling a story about my uncle. This guy shot him 6 times. And he was chasing him down the block, shooting. Bam, hit him. Bam, hit him. Bam, hit him. As he's running, you know how hard it is to hit somebody when you're running with a 38 snub nose? He hit him 6 times. And then my uncle Dom fell, and he put the gun to his head and went click, 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 click. And then the cops got him. Imagine that. And my uncle lived a long life, and he died of cancer many years later. But wow, is he a lucky guy? Go ahead.
This is these are two more cool questions from Michael. The scene where Sonny reverses the car from the house up to the bar is underappreciated and not spoken about enough. Did that really happen?
Yes, where he dropped, where he
backs up and then he just reverses
the
car.
Well, what happened was Sonny used, because he felt like, you know, these guys, they owned the neighborhood. That was then, it was their neighborhood. So he would never drive around the corner. He would back up the street if he had to do something. He would always back up. But actually it was De Niro's idea, who said, no, back up the whole way. Go around the corner, then keep going. It was Bob's idea, and I thought that was great. And so many people comment on that because they remember the wise guys backing up. You know, they remember them because they own the street. It was their village. Don't tell me I can't back up. Don't tell me I can't triple park. I'm doing it. This is our property. We own it. And back then they did, you know? Yeah.
This next question is, if Robert De Niro never existed and you can pick anyone else dead or alive to play your father and still direct the movie, who would it be?
Wow, that's a good question. Who would it be to play my father?
And direct the movie.
And direct the movie?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's an impossible question. I don't. You know, what happened with Bob De Niro is a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Well, who would you want to play Lorenzo?
That'll never happen again. Someone allowed me to be so collaborative with him. That will never happen again. I can't picture anybody playing my father except him, only because De Niro had this quiet strength about him that was pretty amazing. And he played my father so perfect because he studied my father. And I said to him, Bob, you don't have to study him. Nobody knows my father. And he said, no, I want to get him right. And he did it.
You can't picture anyone? What about like a John Voight?
No.
Marlon Brando.
And John Voight's brilliant, but... No, I mean, I don't know. To play my dad? I mean, maybe, I don't know.
Have you ever thought about doing like a reboot or like
a sequel?
Not a sequel, but like a new cast, like reshoot it?
You know, I did the one-man show. I did the motion picture, and I did the musical. It's pretty much, and that's the first time that's ever been done. You know, so... I don't know. Now I'm doing the podcast. So maybe we could do an animation Bronx Tale. I don't know. I don't know. But I can't picture anyone else doing it but Bob, to be honest with you. Really. Anything else?
Yes. Okay. The scene where your friends died in the car explosion, did that really take place?
Yes. That really happened. But the thing that I embellished... in the movie, and as everybody does embellish, was what happened was when my friends came up with the car and they opened the door and they said, get in. I put my foot in the car and I looked and I said, I'm not going. Because I thought of my parents and hurting them. If we got caught, if I just kept thinking about, I don't know, I just didn't want to hurt my parents. So I didn't go in. So Sonny never pulled me out of the car. What happened was I made the decision not to go in. And then, obviously, they died. So a lot of people say, oh, so Sonny never pulled you out. I go, no, that was a part of the story that I embellished. As any writer, you embellish things. It made it more dramatic if Sonny pulled me out as opposed to I didn't go in. But the truth of the matter is I didn't go in. And that's because I didn't want to hurt my parents. So, and I tell that to young kids out there that your life could change like that. Think about it. If I go in and not go out, we're not here right now. All of us, we're not talking. We don't know each other. Dante's not even born.
Hey.
Okay. So everything is different. So one split decision can change your universe. Everything. So I tell the kids out there and all the young people is it takes just watch every decision you make, and it takes just 10 seconds of patience to think we're a lifetime of agony for your family. So think about decisions you make.
This is the last question.
Wait, I wanted to answer that question about that funny question about the girl, about the father.
Okay, all right.
Okay, well, let's do this one. We'll end with that one.
This one is like so the opposite of that.
Go ahead.
This is from Kashif Altaf from London, England.
From London, Kashif?
Kashif.
Okay.
Altaf.
Is that a girl or a guy?
I don't know.
Okay. Here we go.
Okay. This is sort of a loaded question.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, was racism commonplace in Italian areas? And would you say Italians were victims of prejudice as well?
Well, racism, was there racism there in my neighborhood? Yeah. Yeah, there was racism there. Obviously, if you saw the movie. You know, well, let me answer the first part first. Yeah, there was racism there. Was it because they hated black people? And I say they because I didn't. I was this kind of artist-like who I fell in love with a black girl. I dated black women. Not in front of the guys because you couldn't do that, to be honest with you. So yeah, I had to do that on my own. But yeah, there was racism there. But sometimes I don't know, and I'm looking back at it now, I could be wrong. It wasn't because my friends hated black people. I didn't hate black people. I don't even think they did either. It was because we were all poor, and this is all we had. This was our neighborhood. So we were protecting what we had, our candy store, our corner where we hung out. This was the only thing we had, so we protected it. Yes, I saw a lot of racism there, and I saw a lot of people who weren't racist. My dad wasn't racist. My dad was a trainer. Besides being a bus driver, he was a professional boxing trainer. And he trained many wonderful African-American fighters. Clive Taylor was one of them, I remember. Great fighter. And my dad trained him. My dad invited him up to the house. I had dinner. I'm making it sound like a big deal. This is in the 60s, folks. In an Italian neighborhood? And my dad said, hey, Clyde Taylor said he treats me like a son. So I didn't grow up like that. But were other people not like that? Of course, a lot of people weren't. So there was racism in the neighborhood, if you want to call it that, yes. Were Italians prejudiced to racism? Did we receive it? I never received it there because I was born in an Italian neighborhood. So everybody was Italian. So I never really had it. I felt it once when I first got to L.A. I went into this development, and I was looking for an apartment. This is back in 1986. And I walked in, and it said vacancy, so I walked in. I started. The woman, it was a woman. She didn't let me in. I said, is there an apartment available? And she says, what's your name? And I gave her my name, and she goes, it was the summer, so I had a tan, you know. And she says, are you Hispanic? And I said, no, I'm Italian. She goes, you're Italian. I said, yeah, I'm Italian. And she said, no, that's taken. And I could tell that she was lying. I saw it right in her face. She was lying. I saw it. I'm a street guy. I just went, oh. And she shut the door, and I went, wow, did I just get like this to be being Italian or something? And it really felt bad. That was the only time I ever felt it, I think, as an adult, where it bothered me. I said, wow, wow. So, again, not to sound like, I feel bad for people who, you know, for Hispanics and people of color and African-American people who dealt with that. So I understand that. Could I put myself in their shoes? Of course not. That was one incident that happened to me. But I could imagine that happening a lot to me. That would bother me. That would bother me, I think. So I say to people out there, be good to everybody, no matter who they are, black, white, Asian, you know. But I do understand the struggle. But has civil rights come a long way? Absolutely. Is it like that the way it was in the 50s? Of course not. In the 60s? Of course not. But it's still there, but you just have to be aware of it. And try to be a little understanding sometimes if somebody has a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, because I could understand that. Anyway, I don't know where I got off on that one, but I did.
That was great.
So what's that last one about the... you want to? What, you know what that was?
Make a total left turn now.
Well, like, we have to make a left turn because that's Chaz Palminteri's podcast. We don't get real serious. We get serious for a while, then we bang. We do something different. What did that girl say? Do you, Mike? Do you remember what she said?
I forget her name, but I believe it was
Lisa.
I think it was Lisa, and it's like, how do I fart in front of my husband or my partner?
Oh no, she said she farted in front of her husband.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know where we're going on this one, but this girl, Lisa, we won't say her last name because she's probably embarrassed. I don't even think she put her last name down.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. She said she farted in front of her boyfriend. Well, first of all, they're 22 years old. She farted in front of her boyfriend, and she was so embarrassed, she ran in the bathroom. God. And she wouldn't come out until he farted. Until he farted. So... which is an amazing story because something very similar happened to me when I was young. She farted and she ran into the bedroom and she wouldn't come out until I farted. Why am I talking about this? Okay. Anyway, why did we answer this question? Because we thought it was funny. So I stood there trying to fart and I couldn't do it. Obviously, it was very difficult. And we might have to cut this whole thing because I'm embarrassed even saying this.
I think it's great. I'm proud.
You think
fart.
It's great?
I love it.
Well,
fart.
You guys are all crazy. You know, you and Vinicio over here. You know, you guys. Well, you did Chrissy's. You know, Chris DeStefano's podcast. You know, I'm not Chris. Chris is brilliant. He says all these things. I mean, come on. I'm an actor. I'm not a stand-up
people
comic.
People need to know everyone farts.
That's true. Chrissy farts, and we all fart. In fact, I want you to give this question to Chris DeStefano and say,
family.
Chris. Does Jasmine fart in front of you, or do you fart in front of her?
I mean, my
father was a great father. My father, let me tell you something about my father. My father was a control father. He would walk up the steps, and he could fart. He would laugh about it and say, watch this. He'd go, on the steps. My mother, she farted like a song. It was like... It was amazing. I mean, seriously, I'm not kidding right now. So I'm a father of a father who is a father. Okay, and my son will be a great father. He won't admit it, but he will be.
Thoroughbred.
Anyway, how long do you have to wait before you could fart in front of your boyfriend or your girlfriend? I don't know. I think it's a question that's up to you. It's how bad that you have to fart. So... are we it for Neighborhood Logic?
Yeah, that's it. I think
I have one more question.
One more question, okay.
I've always been interested myself. When you make a classic movie, is there any moment where when you watch it back, you regret putting in a moment or a beat?
I think this podcast, this part of the podcast.
The like, farting.
I
think it's great. I think it's great.
But no, like when you watch back A Bronx Tale, is there any moment where you're like, why the hell did we leave that in the edit?
You know, it's funny. You know, a lot of the movies that I wasn't sure about, I never saw. I told you, there's about 7 movies that I never saw. And people go, Chaz, are you kidding me? I said, I just never saw them. For whatever reason, I did it. You know, we all make movies for a lot of reasons. I make movies, I love the art. Right. But every once in a while, you make a movie for the beach house. You have to do it. You know, you got to go, all right, you know, I know this is not a great movie, but you convince yourself, you read it and you go, this could be something. I could make something out of this. And then there's your wife who's going, you're doing that movie because you ain't saying no to that. You know, because, you know, they offer you a lot of money, you know, and sometimes you just go, well, what am I going to do? Sit home for 3 months or go out and make this?
Well, I got a question for you. Yeah. Those movies you've never seen, I think we should film you do a review of those movies on your YouTube.
Oh,
that's
God.
So good.
That is so good.
Like a reaction video.
That's Michael, our producer here, who's saying it.
That's a great idea.
Of the movies that I never saw, do a review on those movies. But that means I would have to see them.
Yes. Well, you have to see them.
Holy shit.
What's one that you haven't saw? Night at the Roxbury. We're starting with Night at the Roxbury.
You oh, but I that? Love Night at the Roxbury.
But you've never seen it.
I never saw the whole thing, but okay. I saw my scene in it.
That's the first one.
But Night at the Roxbury is funny. No, that I'm proud of that movie. That is a great movie. But there's some I never saw. There's, I don't know. I mean, maybe they came out good. I don't know.
Well, we're about to find out.
But we're about to find out, folks. But we're trying to do our neighborhood logic here. And there was one guy who asked a thing about a girl. Dante, did you read that one?
Yeah, he said
yeah.
Do you have his name?
Tommy from Staten Island.
And what did he say?
He says, how can a good, loyal man like me find a good, loyal woman? Where can a good, loyal man like me find a good
woman? Where could he find a good, loyal woman? Probably on 8th Avenue. No, just kidding. where could he find a good, loyal woman? You know what? It's hard to find a person that you really, you know, it's hard to be loyal to each other. It's hard. I mean, it could be done. But if you think about it, man, human beings, and I think there's another animal. Is it geese?
Penguins.
Penguins are the only people who mate for life. That's it. See, marriage, let's use a little neighborhood logic here, folks. Marriage was started when people lived to be 35, 40 years old. 50, maybe they died. Now people are living in their 80s, 90s. You're with one person for 74 years. By then, you got to kill each other. Let's be honest. So it's a lot different. But, you know, I look at it this way. Do you want to be alone when you die? You really want to be alone without children, without people? I just think it's like, it's your memories, it's your moments that you have with your family, that when you're at the end of your life, you say to yourself, hey, I had a great life. I have great memories. My children are doing great. My wife is doing great. She's going to be okay after I leave. So I think I'm one for getting married. I'm one for that, really.
Okay. Yeah, well, you're married. So.
Well, I am married.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, and you're my son.
Yeah.
Right. And my daughter, Gabriella.
Like, what advice would you give to young people in the dating apps?
On these dating apps, yeah. You know, Hookup and what is this other one?
Tinder and Grindr.
Tinder. I mean, see, the problem with, again, I got to use my neighborhood logic. The problem with these dating apps is it's a hookup. So I asked my son once, I go, what is this? He goes, no, you just hook up and you have sex. I go, oh. So it's just like boom, boom, you meet and you do it. All right, I guess that's okay. But we're making it to the point now where people can't even watch, where young boys, this is a proven fact, 21, 20, they're in their 20s, let's put it that way, are having ED problems. How could that be? How could young boys have ED problems, right? And that's from, the psychiatrist is saying, they're watching too much porn. Yeah, I want a blonde. How about a brunette? Ooh. How about a brunette with big boobs? Yeah. No, big boobs and a small waist. Yeah. You can get anything you want.
That's the trailer to the podcast.
There's no magic left to it, you know?
There's no magic left to sex. There's no magic left to relationships. You can get anything you want. You could stay home, see a girl you want, do whatever you got to do, and have sex. You don't need to be there anymore. We don't even have personal feelings anymore. There's a movie by Woody Allen called Sleeper. I don't know if it's a great movie, where you go in this device to have sex. You press a button, you go, spins you around, you come out, and you go, and you smoke a cigarette. So it's like, what the hell is going on? So you know, I think we got to think about that. So I'm concerned with the young people today. They're going to need a lot of Viagra. A lot.
Shout out Blue Chew.
Oh, Blue Chew. That's right. Blue Chew. Blue Chew. I'm here, baby. I'm here. Manscaped, I'm here. Blue Chew, I'm here. So anyway, thank you. We had fun. I mean, the Neighborhood Logic segment has been a big hit. People really love it, and that's why we're doing it. And we have some fun. Please send in your questions. Chaz Palminteri Show at gmail.com. Okay, send in your questions. I'll shout you out, where you're from, your name. If you don't want your name, that's fine. Just put your first name or just don't even put the your name at all.
Questions, not scripts.
Script. Oh, thank you, Dante. Please stop sending me ideas for movies. Please. I love it. I love that you have you're a creative, but I cannot do any ideas for your movies. I can't. I have 5 movies in development in my company. I'm working on that. So please don't send me your ideas or pitch me your stuff. Send me your questions. We can have some laughs. Don't forget, Neighborhood Logic. This is a Chaz Palminteri. Please hit the subscribe button because a lot of great new guests are coming on, and we're going to have some fun. God bless you all. Have a good day.